Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
I am doing question mark, Millennial Ben. Presented by Brakes Plus. This one comes in and it says, Chad, what is the upside? What is the potential for Bradley Chubb? That's a good question. If you had to compare his upside to another player that we're all familiar with, what do you see his ultimate upside being?
I think the key for Bradley Chubb is health. We talked about this yesterday. Size, skill, pass rush moves. Setting the edge in the run game. I think he has all the physical tools and prerequisites. I think he's got the right mindset. He doesn't seem to be a guy who, you know, is flipping about the game. But for him, it's always going to come down to health, trying to find somebody who is an equivalent.
He's 6'4", 275 pounds. So when you think of as a pass rusher, he's on the big side.
I'm thinking
for that.
My immediate thought, because of the size, is a guy like Willie McGinnis.
That's who I was thinking.
I think Bradley's a better pass rusher than Willie was. Willie was a little bit more just of an edge setter, kind of, keep the ball inside kind of
Willie
guy.
Willie was a large man.
Long arms, you know, Willie's a bit taller than Bradley, but I think Willie has the all-time postseason sack record. Obviously, the Patriots played in a lot of postseason games, so he had a lot of opportunities, but, you know, he had to go out there and seize the opportunity. So if Bradley Chubb were to end his career with a William McGinnis kind of career
sign
everybody up. The Patriots got what they wanted with their first-round pick from William McGinnis, and the Broncos would get what they wanted, and Bronco fans, from having Bradley Chubb as the fifth pick in the draft.
Yeah.
If he has a Willie McGinnis career arc.
I was working back there when he got drafted, an enormous man. I think he was third overall pick, if I'm not mistaken. But, okay, that's a good comparison. Yeah.
Now, Willie was, you know, he had a couple of injury issues early on and then was pretty much healthy for the rest of his career. So Bradley Chubb, some injury issues early on. It shows you can, you know, get back to health. But for him, the lower leg injuries are always a concern from a pass rusher perspective because all the bending and twisting and all the weight on your knees and ankles.
Texter says there's exactly a 0% chance Chubb plays all 17 games. Dude is always hurt. Hold on one second. Chubb's been in the league 3 years. First season, played all 16 games. Second season, got hurt. And last year, he played 14, even though he was never 100%. That, to me, is a little bit unfair to say that, all right, you put the Bryce Callahan stamp on this guy. I mean, Callahan's been around long enough to say, okay, this guy just is jinxed by injuries. This guy just can't stay healthy. I know you always talk about the greatest ability is availability.
Absolutely.
I just think that's a little early to say, oh, Bradley Chubb's a guy that's always going to be hurt.
No, I think there are some injury concerns. But I don't think that's a fair stamp to put on him just yet. But yeah, to the texter's point, if he plays 17 games, then he can kind of move past that stamp on him.
You ready for a text that comes after you?
I've been getting, people been coming after me on Twitter ever since yesterday's conversation, so bring it on.
Okay. Wait a minute, who's coming after you?
Boise State fans.
Oh God. Let me guess. They're upset because when we were talking about college football and the future college football and the decimation of all these conferences and it's just going to be tier one, tier two, tier three, they're upset because you didn't put Boise State in tier one.
Pretty much,
oh,
yes.
Geez, come on. Listen, Boise State, you've been a great story for college football. We love your blue turf and everything like that. But if you were asked to go out every week and play Alabama, Michigan, USC, Ohio State, week after week after week, you'd get destroyed.
Yeah, would you
get destroyed?
You would win some games.
Some.
With the key word being some. But you would not be competing for division titles in Tier A.
No.
No.
Continue to enjoy being the big fish in a small pond. Know your place. Stay there. Stay in your lane. For all you followers on Twitter, that's at MikeEvans1043. Leave chat alone. Come after me. Okay, this one. This goes back to our Nuggets conversation about whether or not they've done enough in free agency. Yesterday, they brought back Will Barton, Jamichael Green. They also signed Jeff Green. This one. You're an idiot, Chad. The Lakers are paying those three turds $120 million a year. Now they have to sign like 10 minimum salary players just to round out their roster. I know you're from California, but please shut up about the Lakers. They're done. They're the least of the Nuggets' worries.
Wow.
I wouldn't say the least of the Nuggets' worries.
I don't even know what to say to that. There's you got three all-stars. The proven formula of having three all-stars is pretty strong.
Not, well, okay. I was about ready to say this year proved otherwise, but maybe not, because Milwaukee won the championship with their big three of Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Drew Holiday. They've all been all-stars. So not
Golden State.
Not as sexy a big three as
Golden State did it with their big three.
Right.
Yeah,
but okay, I see what you're saying, but I guess I just don't think of the Bucks as, you know, they formed this super team. This isn't Harden, Kyrie, and Durant. This
is a little bit more homegrown.
This isn't LeBron, Wade, and Bosch, or LeBron, AD, and Russell Westbrook. Notice the theme here. But the Nuggets, I think the Nuggets have the potential to have a big three style like Milwaukee, or a big three style like Golden State.
Potential.
More homegrown.
Potential.
And it so much of it revolves around Michael Jr. Porter,
right,
being able to make the leap. And then, of course, Jamal Murray coming all the way back. But potentially, you have your big three. You have your organic big three.
To push back against the texter, I was simply saying what James Merrillat said yesterday. I wasn't, you know, having a dog in the fight. Just simply saying, hey, James thought that the Nuggets would try to stay pat and deal with the roster that they had, and didn't think they would try to go out and compete with the Lakers and bring in some big money free agent. That was the conversation.
Yeah, that just wasn't going to be the way they do it.
No.
I don't think that's the way they want to do it. And there's also just the idea that getting big time free agents to come here, it's an issue. It is. It's an issue. I don't think you're just going to necessarily say, okay, look at the big names that are out there. Why aren't the Nuggets signing these guys up? You got to get them to want to come here.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's a waste street.
For whatever reason, Denver just isn't regarded as that kind of destination. Some more on this text line. Hey, Evans, after Chad saddled you with the tugboat nickname, I think you should reward him by offering him some banana bread. Inside joke. You haven't heard the story of the banana bread, have you?
No, I'm not familiar.
So, all right, I'll just quickly summarize it. So, Mark told the story of when he was at a high school or college party, and there was a bunch of football players there, and football players are always hungry. And when they're at a party, they're looking to raid, you know, somebody's refrigerator. So Mark saw this banana bread that was on cooling on the counter. And, you know, Mark, always looking for the next prank, decided to take this two loaves of banana bread, and on one of them, he went over to the cat litter box and put some of the cat bits in one of the loaves of banana bread. And knowing how his teammates would react, he came walking out into the living room.
Please stop.
With a loaf of banana bread in each hand, and immediately one of his teammates grabbed the banana bread out of his hand and started just chowing down on it. And then the priceless reaction.
We would be fighting, fighting. That's not a prank.
That's not a prank?
That is a fighting. It's too far. I'm not sure if it's not fighting words. It's a fighting joke. It's something that requires me and you fighting at the end of the night. That's what this was.
Really?
Yes. I would not take.
You're the one that took his banana bread.
I would not take it lightly.
So you're allowed to take his banana bread with.
It wasn't even his banana bread. I stole the bread that you stole. We're really going to get into a semantic argument about whose bread it is?
Uh-huh.
You're the one to put cat poop in it, man. And that's what I'm going to fight you about.
Yeah, you're right. That would be. I'd have a hard time at that moment just going, oh, stink.
Yeah,
oh, stink. You
funny
scam.
One. You got
you
me,
scam.
Buddy.
You got me.
Yeah, see you at practice tomorrow. No, we're fighting.
Oh, beautiful. So anyway, there we go.
Meow. Meow.
Let's see. Let's get some more here with the takes here. All right. Pads today. They're going to be out in their pads.
Mm-hmm.
Full pads. Always one of the highlights of training camp. Boy, does that tell you how much training camps have changed over the years when the rare times that they show up in full pads and might actually hit. Gets everybody all in, you know. I mean, that was just a normal day. That was Tuesday.
Right.
You know, back in the day. What do we expect today?
I think we expect some.
Will there be hitting?
There will be not game style hitting. No, there'll be.
There still will be no bringing people down to the turf.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what the CBA rules are. I know this is, you know, a lot of teams are going into pads today, but I it's hard to imagine anybody going with any kind of full speed periods. This is the feeling out phase. You need a little bit of time to feel it out and get used to the pads. So to think that, you know, you're going to go over there, it's going to be one-on-one tackling and, there's going to be, you know, full speed team periods. It's just not going to be the case. That time will come as camp goes along. There will be, you know, full speed short yardage, full speed goal line. You have to do those things to prepare for the season, but it ain't going to be today. Kick that can down the road for a bit.
Another texter says, the reason I'm down on Pat Surtain as a corner has never turned a franchise around.
You still need him.
Yeah.
Whether he's a franchise turner arounder or not,
right.
You still need him. You know, when I went to the Seahawks, I was expected to turn the franchise around. I was like, I'm a linebacker. I'm trying to make some tackles.
Right.
That's my goal. I'm not here to turn this franchise around. It was a unrealistic expectation. Hopefully Patrick Surtain is not burdened by any of this fan, you know, discomfort with his pick. He's going to be a good player for a long period of time for the Denver Broncos. Embrace this kid. Mm-hmm. You're going to love him in a couple of years when he shuts down, you know, Tyreek Hill or something.
Right.
That's where his value is going to be. Can he turn a franchise around? No. But can he slow down a franchise quarterback within the division? He can help do that.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. A cornerback is not going to turn a franchise around by himself, but I also know that as I go down the list of Super Bowl winners throughout history, funny how many of them have a great corner.
And what
or
that
great corners.
Yes, and what that allows you to do defensively, you can be a lot more aggressive. You can unleash your pass rushers. You can get creative in the blitz game if you have guys you like back there. So it's more than just a guy covering receivers. Cornerbacks can have a ripple effect throughout the entire defense.
We had this whole debate during the offseason. You just sell out for the quarterback. It's all about the quarterback. You keep swinging for quarterbacks until you find one. Or is there something to the idea of while you're in the process of trying to find that quarterback, you build up the roster? I'm a roster builder guy. I love the idea of building up a great roster, a strong roster, while still recognizing the importance of the quarterback. But I'm not going to go hell-bent for election when it comes to getting a quarterback if I don't believe in that quarterback, if I don't have a high grade on that quarterback. You know, I keep the whole bit about, well, why did George Payton pass on Justin Fields? He should have taken Justin Fields. George Payton was hired because he is a scout. He is an evaluator. This is the kind of guy who loves to pour through tape, to evaluate players, to assign a grade to a player, and to put a big board together with all of his players and who are the most highly graded. And my response to the folks who say, well, why'd they take Pat Surtain when they could have had Justin Fields? I think the answer is as simple as this. The guy who you paid and hired to be your general manager did his evaluations, looked at a guy like Pat Surtain and said, you know what? This guy is like a 9.7. He looked at Justin Fields, did his evaluation, and when it was all said and done, goes, yeah, this guy's like a 7.8. So my question to Bronco fans is, the guy you hired, based on his ability to evaluate players, in his first ever draft, you want him to pass on the guy he's got a 9.7 grade on and take a guy that he's got a 7.8 grade on? How does that make sense? It doesn't.
It makes no sense. And let's not forget, I think George Payton has an ability to read the room. And I think Vic Fangio's status played a role in some of this thinking. I don't think he boosted up Patrick Surtain's grade based on that, or brought down Justin Fields' grade because he did his job as a grader. But you want to bring in a franchise quarterback, there's a long list of franchise quarterbacks who weren't getting the support within the organization that they needed, never became a franchise quarterback. So there's a culture and a structure that needs to be around these guys a lot of times for them to be successful. You know, I spent time with the Jets doing an internship. When they drafted Sam Darnold, I thought, I'm not sure if that's the right organization to bring this guy into the harbor. You know what I mean? There's not enough tugboats over there for this guy to get safely into harbor. Had to go with the tugboat there. But for George Payton to recognize, okay, John Elway's kind of on his way out. I'm on my way in. We're transitioning to ownership. Maybe how long is this head coach going to be here? To bring in a rookie quarterback with those expectations and all that swirling around him also doesn't give that quarterback the best chance for success versus Pat Surtain, who's not going to be affected by any of that at all. That gives him a better chance for success.
Tampa was such an interesting case study last year. Tom Brady put him over the top. They do not win a Super Bowl without Tom Brady. But they already had a really good football team in place.
Yes.
You know, they had a really good football team. And Tom Brady, one of the reasons why he was ready to leave New England was he recognized they no longer had a really good football team. And for years, he put a really good football team over the top, but it was a really good football team that was there.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, do I want and do I understand that at some point the Broncos have to find their long-term answer at quarterback? Yeah. But in the process of having a GM whose job it is to evaluate players, I don't want him to take a quarterback that he's got a 7.8 grade on just because he's supposed to take one. I'm going to trust that he will do his due diligence and he'll find that quarterback that passes his criteria. But in the meantime, until he finds that guy, I don't want him to overdraft a guy just because we're all yelling for him to go get a quarterback. In the meantime, I'd rather he go out and continue to draft really good players that he is evaluated and has high grades on. As long as you continue to bring in good football players, eventually it's going to work out. It may not work out for people who want that instant gratification of, oh, look, we got one of our shiny new quarterbacks. Oh, we're so excited. They may not be happy, but in the meantime, you're bringing in good football players.
I think I'm somewhere in between you and D-Mac. I know D-Mac's the relentless pursuit of quarterbacks or whatever his, whatever
his,
that thing
is. His audiobook.
Yes. So I think I would have a relentless pursuit for quarterbacks with the ability to discern when is the proper time to build my roster versus having a relentless pursuit. I'm going to go after every quarterback possibility every single time, but I'm not going to risk my franchise. I'm not going to gamble on it. But I'm going after every quarterback, evaluating everyone, trying to see if there's a way to scheme every single one. I'm going, you know, the mindset is relentless pursuit, but the realities of football practicality are going to win out a majority of the time. Does that make sense?
Do you think George Payton is clueless and doesn't recognize, is not aware of the importance of the quarterback? In today's NFL.
Of course,
right?
He's not.
It's a stupid question.
Right.
Of course he does. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you think he's just purposely turning a blind eye to it? Do you honestly think that if he had similar grades, a similar evaluation of Pat Surtain and Justin Fields, that he would have taken Sertan over Fields?
No.
No. No. Give the man more credit. But I guess what you're saying is, then, doesn't matter if you've done all your work and all your study and all your evaluation and Pat Surtain has a much higher grade than Justin Fields, you still have to take Fields because he's a quarterback. And you have to keep swinging for these guys.
See, that's where you lose me. You're diving deeply into every quarterback, but the practical football realities have to win out in the end. It's not baseball where you can use every one of your draft picks on a pitcher. Because a team did that this year. This is football. You have to build an entire roster of players. You need depth at other positions. There's a lot of things you're trying to accomplish, and you can't just ignore all of that until you get a quarterback and then try to build a team around him. Because then that franchise quarterback who you got, the shiny new toy, he can't play well because there's nothing around him. What good did you do yourself then?
The whole idea of when you don't have a quarterback, you got to be willing to take risks and gambles.
Calculated risk in my mind, but
okay.
to the other side of this argument, well, yes, they're willing to forgo everything to try to get XYZ quarterback.
You had your fair share of filling in while Carson Wentz was out there. And you know, I know you heard, because I heard from people who are like, Broncos need to be on Carson Wentz. I'm like, why? Well, because look at what he did when he was healthy. I'm like, yeah, but the dude has a history of injuries that, coupled with that contract, make him somebody I don't want to go near right now. Yeah, but you got to take a chance. Well, Indy took a chance.
Yeah.
And what happened?
Mm-hmm.
He's hurt again.
And even
he's hurt again.
Even if he wasn't hurt, I called the Philly Packers game last year. I saw Aaron Rodgers on the same field as Carson Wentz. Trust me. Carson Wentz is nowhere near Aaron Rodgers. Just watching the two guys warm up on the field was laughable in the difference in their accuracy, their quarterback acumen, their footwork, ball placement, ease of making all the various throws. So, yeah, they're relentless pursuit of quarterbacks, but quarterbacks that can play, quarterbacks that actually make sense. That's the guys we will have relentless pursuit for. Carson Wentz, no. You got an injury history, and you're not very accurate, and your teammates don't trust you. I saw receivers walking back to the huddle in that Green Bay game, shrugging their shoulders. Like, what was that throw? Were you serious with that? Because it wasn't anywhere near me, man. We have no shot.
Well, the Carson Wentz supporters will say he didn't have good guys to throw to.
There's not a long list of Pro Bowlers at the receiver spot. But I think it's also kind of circular right. Sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, give George Payton credit for this, okay? He understands the importance of it. And to the whole Justin Fields.
No, I don't think I will.
Yeah, Benny wanted Justin Fields. All I know about Justin Fields is this. In October, November of last year, he was the consensus can't-miss number two quarterback prospect behind Trevor Lawrence. In fact, some people felt that he was better than Lawrence. He should be number one. So why then did Zach Wilson jump over him? Why did Trey Lance jump over him? Why did Fields drop to the point where it wasn't just the Broncos who passed on Fields, some other teams
mm-hmm.
who we thought needed a quarterback would take him, passed on him. Who knows how much further he would have dropped had Chicago not moved up. Even the Chicago move reeked of a little desperation of a coach and general manager trying to save their hide. So it wasn't like George Payton was the only guy out there in the NFL who supposedly soured on Justin Fields. The NFL sent a pretty clear message in regards to Justin Fields that he wasn't or isn't the can't-miss prospect that he was as most recently as last October. That's the other thing about this, too, Broncos country. George Payton was brought in to be your GM.
Yeah.
He's got a 6-year contract. At some point, you got to have some faith in him. At some point, you got. At some point, you know what? I know. It is funny, and I know the irony of that. But in this case, there is a certain. Hey, the guy was brought here. He had a good resume. He has been a sought-after candidate to be a GM for a long time now. You got him. You gave him a six-year contract. Put a little faith in the guy that he knows what he's doing.
Yep.
Don't just bury him after just 1 year. All right, we'll get back to some more of your texts coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors is the home of zero down. Regardless of your credit or financial situation, Siltahar Motors will help you get behind the wheel. People with poor credit or in bankruptcy can qualify for zero down and no payments for 45 days and be driving in their new car within hours of stopping by the dealership. Check out any of the cars Siltahar Motors currently has on site at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors is conveniently located at Highway 36 in Wadsworth, so regardless of your financial situation, Siltahar Motors will get you the car you deserve at sthmotors.com.
Chad Brown in for Stink. We'll be back tomorrow.
Chad Brown.
I got to bring
Chad Brown,
our feisty little millennial Ben in.
Yeah. Ben came in.
Because he came in to the studio right as we went to break, breathing fire, and dropped this bombshell. Go ahead.
All right. So you said, like, you brought it up. You're like, is George Payton, do you think he's an idiot? And I just responded like, I could, because most NFL GMs are not that good at their job. There's probably seven or eight who know what they're doing. So
keep
George
going.
Payton
what
could
else did you
fall
say?
Into
what
that
else
category.
Did you say?
Don't soften it, Ben.
Don't soften.
You were breathing
something.
Fire when you came here.
You said something else,
man.
Too.
Give it to us.
Well,
I said
most GMs don't know what they're doing.
And that most of us.
Oh, yeah, this idea that they're, like, smarter than all of us is just, like, not true, in my opinion.
So you think...
They're not special.
So you think, if given the opportunity, out of the blue, given the opportunity to run an NFL franchise, you could step right in and
be better than Mike Mayock? Yes.
And maybe even better than George Payton?
Well, I want to give George Payton time to, like, prove himself, uh-huh. But yeah, I why not? I could run a team better than the Bengals the last 10 years just by picking names out of a hat.
And
if you want to get hotter, maybe John Elway the last 4 or 5 years.
There is some truth to that.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
There is some truth to that, Ben.
As much as my football heart wants to push back, it's hard to.
Last thing I want to say is I grew up a Lions fan, so just putting faith in the GM means nothing to me.
Okay.
There is enough examples that we could cite and that Ben could cite that makes his point pretty strongly.
Mm-hmm.
I want to push back with all my football being because I know what all the time those scouts put in and all the time the GMs put in. But then you see these picks and you're just like, no, that kid can't play. Everyone knew that. How could you not know that?
Right.
What happened inside the bubble that convinced you that all of us outside the bubble clearly saw and knew?
Right. Benny's not wrong.
He's not.
And because I've had the same thought myself. I'm like, come on. If you look at what the Broncos have done over the last 5 years, are you telling me that if you gave me the keys to this franchise the last 5 years, give me scouts and give me millions and millions of dollars to be able to go out, that I couldn't do better? Yeah, I've thought about it, too, that I could do better. Yeah.
It took me a practice and a half at the first minicamp to predict the success of all the rookies, draft picks and free agents, a practice and a half. And I could tell
when you were a player.
When I was a player. I could tell you who could play, and I could tell you who couldn't play within a practice and a half.
And you ended up being pretty close?
I would say I was 90, 95%.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. There were very few surprises. Because now, but of course, I suppose the GM didn't get a chance to see these guys on an NFL field being coached by NFL coaches, comparing them to other NFL players. So that's what I got as a player, seeing them on the field. They have to extrapolate all that based on this kid's at North Dakota State, this kid's at Ohio State, this kid went to Howard, you know, all these other different schools and programs and backgrounds, and try to picture them on an NFL field. But within a practice and a half on an NFL field, I could tell you with 90% accuracy.
Then why do so many make so many mistakes? Why?
I think there's just such an incredible amount of variables in the process that are almost impossible to figure out.
Does it become almost is it really paralysis by analysis?
I think so. You know, if I were me, would I be comfortable missing out on Jerry Rice because I wanted to go with guys from big schools? I would tend to be a big school guy if I were GM. You played at Ohio State. You practiced against really good guys. You played against really good guys. You had really good coaches. You know, you played at some other school, and, you know, I have no idea. So would I bring in the belly, Quinn, from a third round, a Division III school? I probably wouldn't, because I'm going to lean on big school guys. This is how I work. So I would miss out on some of these other guys, because I would really try to reduce my risk as small as I possibly could. And by going to big school guys, I think that would make me more comfortable in the process.
So the guys that you correctly identified within a practice and a half that couldn't play, was there a common denominator of why you arrived at that conclusion that they couldn't play? Was it physical? Was it mental? What?
It was, I would say a majority of the time it was mental. Because it's easy to, you know, get your linebackers and have them, you know, and compare all the pro agility drills and have them do the L drill and all that combine kind of stuff and look at their numbers. So if you're just too slow, then you, chances are you don't make it. So it's rarely the physical on the field. It's the mental or the flexibility or these other things that are more difficult to evaluate. Sometimes it's just toughness. It's, you guy walks in, you go, he's just not tough enough to do this. Mm-hmm. He's big enough. I seen him in a weight room. He's strong enough, but I'm going to run through his face and he's not going to respond. I can tell just by looking at you who you are sometimes. And so I think those things are the more difficult parts of the evaluation process that are lost when you're looking at spreadsheets with numbers on them.
Well, we have a combine every year in which all we do is measure guys' measurables.
Right.
And guys stand out or guys are knocked down just strictly based on measurables. And to your point, most of the guys who don't work out, it's because of the mental stuff. But yet we have a whole exercise called the combine that is designed for everything but that.
I coach
a whole exercise that is designed for everything that is the opposite of what your years of playing in the NFL, your own experience tells you, no, this isn't what ultimately defines a player.
I coached the NFL PA All-Star game in February 2020. I had six linebackers. My second best linebacker is not in the NFL. The other five are. The other, a lot of the other five are playing special teams. They're faster in the 40. So like, oh, you check. So I would talk to the scouts. I'm like, this is the second best linebacker I got here. And they're like, well, you know, he's not as fast, so he can't play on special teams and this, that, and the other. I'm like, but he can play football. You keep talking about stuff that's not football. This kid can play football. He got an interception in the game. He took it back for 20 yards. He did everything I asked as a coach. He got better. He was a leader. I asked him to, you know, break down the huddles. I asked him to make the play calls. He's a football player. And he's not in the NFL right now, but these other guys who were better athletes but weren't as good as a football player are now in the league. So maybe I would tell the scouts, because they were there at every practice, and some of the scouts I knew really well, maybe I'm missing something here. Maybe am I the one who's wrong? I think you guys are the one who's wrong, because this is a football player, and you're talking about numbers. I'm talking about a guy who played in a program in the Big Ten, a guy who was successful, a guy who, you know, played multiple linebacker spots, a guy who was a team captain, who's now become a captain within a couple of days working with my group. I want this guy. Well, Chad, he's not going to get drafted. I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong, and I will go down saying you're wrong. And I actually texted with this player's dad the other night. Your son can play in the NFL. I know this. He just needs to find the right fit. So,
has he given up on his football dream?
No, he's still pursuing it. He's still young enough to pursue it, but I think, you know, he's got about another year before he's just kind of.
Is he in a camp right now?
I'm not sure if he's on. No, I don't think he's on anybody's roster right now. So he's still pursuing the dream, but crushed, because I think he knows he can play football, and he was better than those guys at the All-Star game. Not as fast, not as big, not as strong, but he could play.
It absolutely is an exact science, but you just wonder sometimes, Because Mark has been able to, Mark has said the same thing. He goes, I could tell within two practices that the quarterback we took third overall in Washington, he Shuler couldn't play, but the guy that we took in the sixth round, Gus Frerotte, could.
It's
and he's right.
Yes.
So it just makes you wonder what's driving these decisions. You know, it's just what where is the common sense?
You hear agents say, I can help, you know, this player get drafted. And this is like, wow, an agent has influence over who gets drafted? Are you kidding me? The college tape should be the influencer. I don't care who the agent is and what he says. I can look at the tape and know who plays. So when agents say that, I used to think that was crazy. That's actually real. There are scouts and GMs who will listen to agents over college tape. So, Ben, I want to say you're crazy, but you're not. And that's ridiculous.
Millennial Ben, future NFL GM. Millennial Ben, a lot tougher than I thought. Okay. All right. We got one more segment with Chad. We're gonna savor it. We're going to savor it. We'll do that next. So, while there are some on the text line who are like, you go, Millennial Ben, you're right. Even us guys on our couch could be better than a lot of these general managers.
Absolutely.
I love this one. It just says, well, I got to clean it up a little bit. It says, bleep, effing millennial. Typical.
Very nice.
But it would seem crazy that this could be the case, that you could actually have this argument, that there are professional football people who are responsible for some of these organizations and franchises, which are just epically bad year after year after year. So, yes, on one hand, you're like, yes, typical millennial, think you can do anything, you have no idea, you don't have the experience to pull it off. But on the other hand, you know, there's all kind of examples that Ben can cite that, you know, we all would agree with. So it's not that crazy.
But it still comes down to, though, you have a guy in place whose job it is to evaluate. Now, whatever, now, hopefully, and we'll find out as the drafts start to accumulate under George Payton, we'll get a clear idea about what he's looking for and what he bases his evaluation on. And hopefully he's not just some somebody who just, you know, it's all about the measurables. Hopefully he's able to look at guys and talk to people and get the same kind of feedback that guys like you and Stank have, when they can just be out on the field with these guys and within a practice and a half know that they can play or not. Hopefully he can figure that part out, because as much as I call the draft a crapshoot, and it is, the fact remains, it is still the best way to build a core of a football team that's going to win for a long time. It's still the best way to do it. It's still really the only way to do it. And there are some in this 50-50 crapshoot world that is the NFL draft that do it better than others.
Yeah.
And those are the teams that win and win for a long time. So hopefully Peyton's one of those guys. But it still comes back to the idea that, come on, we were all here when George Payton was hired, and we all understood how he was sold to us. This guy's a grinder. This guy will start looking at film at 5 in the morning and won't come up for air until it's, you know, 8 o'clock at night. This is what he was hired on. This is his strength. So for the time being, I'm going to trust that this guy knows what he's doing. I have no choice. In Broncos country, you have no choice. This is the guy who's been hired to steer your franchise. You got to hope that he can figure it out. If not, we're staring at another 5 years of this.
Right.
So I'm going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt for the time being. And if he didn't think Justin Fields was worth drafting, if he didn't think Mac Jones was worth drafting, I'm going to trust his evaluation skills. And I'm not going to just listen to the people who are like, well, it doesn't matter what his draft grade was. We have a need for quarterback. Quarterback is important. He should have taken one.
just to take one?
If it were Mike Mayock or even John Lynch brought in out of the broadcasting booth to be the GM, I could see some of the doubt. But for George Payton, who has literally been grinding watching tape for, you know, 20-plus years, turned down this opportunity until he felt it was the right time, the right fit, and all that, where he could really put his stamp on things, I've got far less doubt about this guy than I would about John Lynch or Mike Mayock. There's a track record there. There's a consistency there. There's a philosophy and motto, I think, which shows through in how they built the Vikings. So I'm with you. I know I don't have a lot of choice, but I also recognize, even in my midst of not having a choice, this seems to be a good choice. And so I will trust him. And again, I see the Patrick Surtain pick as eliminating bad football. If I were to come into any organization as a new manager, boss, whatever, the first thing I want to do is eliminate the bad things. Because if we can eliminate those and just do the basics at a pretty high level, we give ourselves a pretty good chance for success. The cornerback room was a bad room last year. There was not enough depth in that room. Shorted up through free agency, shorted up through the draft. We don't have to worry about that room. That room is no longer subjected to bad football, which cost us games last year. The whole quarterback thing, that's a whole different variable and a whole different set of risk-reward versus my first year, I just want to clean up and eliminate the bad spots. If I can do that, then we can move into the future in a much more successful way.
If Drew Lock does not establish himself this year, if he doesn't make the leap, do you think that George Payton's going to go into year two with the idea that I don't have to take make a serious move when it comes to the quarterback position? They'll just continue to build the football team.
No, I think he's going to have to be forced to look at the quarterback position, and hopefully by that time there is some direction in ownership, because quarterbacks and owners, that's an important discussion to have. Mm-hmm. Because even if you draft a guy, well, then 3 years later you could be signing that guy to a $300 million contract or a $450 million contract like Patrick Mahomes. So that conversation needs to be had with ownership. So you might want to know who the owner is when you start making these moves that could potentially cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
By the way, for the folks out there who think that George Payton somehow is, anti-quarterback and doesn't recognize the importance of the quarterback and doesn't want to do something bold when it comes to taking a quarterback, I have no doubt. My opinion is that he went into this offseason with the idea that he was going to land Deshaun Watson. That he was going to be a serious player for Deshaun Watson prior to everything going down.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, the whole situation, that there was something there.
Even before Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Even before Rodgers.
Well, they were after Matthew Stafford.
Right.
So,
but he was in on Matthew Stafford, but was he really in on Matthew Stafford?
Well, at some point, you've got lines and you've got budgetary constraints. And
you're
else.
A GM. You're going to kick the tires on everything that's right out there. You're getting a chance to play GM for the first time in your life. Of course, you're going to be in on everything. You're going to make phone calls and inquiries. But in terms of really going for something, I think he was prepared to go all out for Watson.
Top five quarterback, still young. Who wouldn't be?
Right. So you agree with me,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So that if we're both in agreement, what does that say? We're both in agreement that George Payton recognizes the value of the quarterback and is prepared to go big to get one, right?
It's a ridiculous thought that somehow a general manager of an NFL football team is anti-quarterback.
Okay.
It's absurd.
He didn't like Justin Fields. Okay, folks? That's as simple as that.
That seems to be the only logical conclusion,
yes.
He
didn't buy the hype with Justin Fields. If he did, he would have drafted him.
Right.
Even over Patrick Surtain. Sometimes it's as simple as that. All right. That was fun. I don't know if I like the fact that you nicknamed me Tugboat.
I do. The listeners do. The text line does. So we don't care what you think, Mike.
No,
it's fantastic
no, no.
For us.
Hey, one thing I know about these great listeners, they don't care what I think. They certainly don't care about my feelings. They don't care about Sting's feelings. They don't care about your feelings.
No, they don't.
They're very unfeeling.
Nice.
They're a very unfeeling group.
But we love them nonetheless.
Yes, we do.
Wouldn't be where we are without them. So thank you very much. Hey, that was a lot of fun. Thank you so much, as always, for sitting in. I have a great time this weekend. I know it's going to be a fun weekend for you with all your Bronco and Steeler connections. You're going to have a good time this weekend.
I'm going to enjoy the heck out of it. And then I'll be in studio tomorrow. So I'll be on with Sandy. So I'll be following you tomorrow. Not so joining you, but sleep, following you.
You're going to get to sleep in tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. The alarm won't go off till well after 8,
probably. Oh, man. I'm so jealous. All right. Stink's back tomorrow. By the way, he's got a big announcement to make tomorrow. It's not Aaron Rodgers related, so relax. But he has a big announcement to make nonetheless. He'll be back tomorrow. Sandy and Nate Jackson coming up next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.